Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:55 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is March 31st. Well, we had a big day today in a large number of stocks, but most particularly it was because of the Biden administration clearly signaling that they fully intend to go ahead with a $2.25 trillion stimulus, and that's hot in the heels of the $1.9 trillion approved less than a month ago. So this is a lot of money. Even in today's markets, it's a lot of money. And I think the parallels that we have with the kinds of sums that were being thrown around in 2007 that caused the global financial crisis, compared with the kinds of losses today that were just announced last week from family office Archegos, it gives us, I think, a good perspective on just how much money has been printed in the last 12 years. The Barclays hedge funds that went under back in 2007 lost about $400 million, and that was considered a lot of money back then. And then Archegos has lost something in the region of $20 billion, and it's a rounding error for some banks. Obviously, Credit Suisse and Nomura are taking the brunt of it, but the majority of banks were able to sidestep it. So they've definitely got better risk control today than they had back then, and so far there's little sign of contagion. Of course, it doesn't mean that we won't have contagion eventually. But the most important thing from last year, it's not so much that we've had a lot of money printed, but the pandemic afforded corporations the opportunity to significantly lengthen out the maturity wall. There was a great deal of debt that was coming due in 2021 and 2022, and now that probably won't be an issue until sometime out in about 2025. So when we think about issues with debt, most companies, or governments for that matter, seldom have issues with financing the repayments. It's when they need to start making the principal repayments is when they start running into trouble. And it's refinance risk is where the biggest risk resides in the bond markets. So from a corporate perspective, it's less of an issue. And then, of course, we have large numbers of companies that are going to benefit from the infrastructure build. And but then also we saw that the technology companies rallied impressively in here today as well. Is that necessarily because there was any particular good news in the stimulus package for them? I don't think it is, but rather that they thrive on liquidity, and an extra couple of trillion is certainly going to benefit a lot of businesses. So the S&P 500 was at a new all-time high in here today. Now, one thing we can certainly point out is that since January of this year, every time it has pushed on to a new high, those new highs have not been sustained. So it hasn't quite closed at a new high today. And obviously there has been some pause and consolidation around this big psychological 4,000 level. So it's a big hurdle that it has to get over. And it would certainly be beneficial if once it surmounts that big level that it can hold the move. But we can also then look at the Nasdaq, because it's looking increasingly likely that the Nasdaq has put in a higher reaction low. It almost fully unwound its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. It looks like the lows put in last week are going to hold. And when we look at some of the larger constituents, then they are firming. So Facebook, for example, has been going sideways now since August, and it's right in the region of the upper side of that range right now. So it has now clearly broken that downward bias that existed really until approximately 3 weeks ago. Google is also firing on all cylinders once more and pushed on from the 2000 level in here today. So that's also quite positive. It has not quite fully unwound its overbought condition relative to the trend mean, but so far this reaction is pretty similar to the one that we saw at the end of last year. So this is still a reasonably consistent trend, and Google has been investing rather heavily over the last decade in the technologies that are expected to be delivered and to really create value over the next decade, which are autonomous vehicles or autonomy in many different shapes, and also quantum computers. Microsoft is still pausing, and it was off its highs in here today, but it has now unwound most of its overextension, and it's still holding the breakout to new highs. So this is still a staircase step sequence uptrend, and as long as that remains the case, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we think about Apple, it was right in the region of the trend mean. It is beginning to steady. It really will need to do better than this, but at least it is not breaking downwards. And of course, it being the largest company in the world, how well it does is obviously going to have an impact on the outlook for the wider market. Small caps also did well in here today and also look like they have firmed from the lower side of this 2-month range. Considering the quantity of money that's going to be spent, then the question is what kind of infrastructure is going to be prioritized? Well, it is good news that more people will be or that are delivering drinking water that's safe to more people will be a priority. Tesla, though, put in a upside Q reversal yesterday and followed through on the upside in here today. So there is certainly some, I think, enthusiasm that the clean energy portion of the stimulus will benefit the company. It could also benefit the outlook for some of the companies that are attempting to set themselves up as charging station providers. So ChargePoint, for example, rebounded really rather impressively from the region of the trend mean. It's completely unwound the initial surge that we saw last year, but it has now steadied from the $20 level, and it has done enough to break the downward bias as well. Blink Charging is a similar company that pretty much does the same thing. It are they want to provide charging infrastructure. Now we can also look at this chart because it does have a lot more back history, but it did pop on the upside in here today, and it did unwind most of its overextension relative to the trend mean. Of course, the other point is that it is these kinds of companies that don't have any earnings are most at risk from higher interest rates. So they are very dependent on ability to be either funded by the private markets or by the government in terms of stimulus and demand for their products. So they could potentially benefit from the rollout of this new stimulus package. Of course, that is assuming it is passed. The Democrats are going to have to pull out every trick in the book in order to achieve that because there is just no way the Republicans are going to vote for it. The reality is that the focus of the various measures is aimed primarily at appeasing the parts of the country where right-wing populists were able to gain most support, particularly in I guess for President Tr former President Trump. So a lot of the measures are certainly going to benefit those portions of the country where that Republican base is strong, and that is directly aimed at appeasing that populist revolution that has been brewing since the response to the global financial crisis. And that's also relatively positive in terms of social cohesion. So there are certainly both pros and cons to the evolution of what's going on, but we can definitely say that it's beneficial for a market that has been addicted to liquidity for the entire last 13 years, and as long as there is additional new liquidity, then it's likely to be positive for assets. So the dollar was a little weaker in here today, not in a dynamic manner by any means. I think it's also worth looking at the Bloomberg Dollar Index because it has also got some components like the Chinese renminbi and the Indian rupee. So it's not as heavily skewed towards the euro, and that is now right in the region of its trend mean. Obviously, Europe would like a weaker currency, and they are certainly doing enough to try and bring it down. Most particularly, the complete failure of the Europeans to predict that there would be an acute shortage of vaccines and that they needed to prioritize securing whatever doses were available means that a number of countries have had to go back into lockdown. Most recently, France today is going back into a 1 month lockdown. So that has been weighing on the currency. Of course, the next question is it going to this rise in the number of cases, is that going to be limited to Europe? Or is the nascent uptick in cases that we've seen in the northeast of the USA going to spread to the rest of the country and become more exaggerated where it is currently evident? It's a big question because the USA is now well on the way to vaccinating large portions of the population. So is the UK. I know a number of 40-year-olds or 40-somethings that have now had the vaccine made available to them in the UK. So certainly the pace of vaccinations is going to favor countries like the UK and the USA. The pound has been pausing here in the region of the 140 area versus the dollar. It's the upper side of a base formation that's been forming for the last 5 years. And there's the clear scope that the UK will come out of the pandemic in a stronger position overall. I think one thing that's been quite interesting is that we've had a lot of really headline-grabbing stories about the oil price, but the oil price itself has been quite steady but looks susceptible to additional weakness. We got all the way up towards $70. That's an area where it will encourage additional supply into the market, and now the price is starting to come back down, despite the fact that OPEC has been quite clear that they're going to maintain their lower production targets. The reality is that there is a temptation, I think, by some analysts to think that because there is an argument for a commodity-led bull market that oil necessarily has to do well, because it was oil that led on the upside during the last commodity bull market, and since it is, I think, instrumental in the production and certainly in the cost of production for the vast majority of other commodities, then a bull market in oil would be a tailwind for a bull market in just about everything else as well. But we don't have the same type of argument for a big bull market in oil that we do for other commodities. When we look at lumber, well, lumber prices, and I think looking at the extremely long chart is really beneficial here because lumber had been incredibly cyclical. Every time it got up to about 450, it fell back to 150, and that had gone on for decades. And then we had the mountain pine beetle infestation that moved right across the Rockies and into the Pacific Northwest and then down into California. And that coincided with the drought in California and the Pacific Northwest as well. The result was that we had a lot of dead trees, and the majority of logging now in North America is taking place in Canada and in the US Southeast. So in Georgia, the Carolinas, Virginia, and Florida. So that has represented a supply inelasticity argument. And there's obviously been an inhibition in terms of the ability to get supply chains working sufficiently efficiently to get lumber to where it is needed. And the price today is above $1,000. So that is going to have a knock-on effect in terms of the cost of building houses. And there is an acute shortage of new houses. I've been trying to buy a house now in Dallas for about a month. We were a bit slow off the blocks, and then we were here during the winter freeze, so it wasn't particularly conducive to seeing the city and trying to figure out where the best place to settle was. But competition is absolutely fierce. I mean, there have been bidding wars on some of the million-dollar-plus houses that we've been looking at, where there have been upwards of 10 and 11 bids. So one is forced to bid over asking, and then escalation clauses are being ignored entirely because the pace of cash buyers coming in is also extremely aggressive. And in the at the lower price point, then the number of offers is a multiple of where it is the higher price point, and there is an acute shortage of houses, not only because there are so few new ones, but also because owners of existing homes are afraid to sell because they're worried that they won't be able to buy a house where they would like to move to at an attractive price, and they are just simply waiting it out to see how high prices can go. And the cost of building new houses is going to increase. When we look at the performance of companies that are buying houses and should be doing reasonably well, Zillow is now back in the region of the trend mean. They've been trying to flip houses. But of course, the other point is that when one looks at these at their Zestimates and their estimates of where prices are, they are way divorced from reality. So there's going to be a significant re-upping in terms of the base level of where housing is, and that is likely to be inflationary. One of the primary constituents of inflationary measures is the imputed rental cost. And if the cost of building goes up and the cost of houses goes up, well, then the imputed rental cost should also rise. And that's also something that is likely to kick in later in the year as we look at the end of the moratorium on evictions. Now, that was prolonged again until the end of June. It's going to be an incredibly disruptive thing to impose on people who are in dire straits. And of course, there will also be malingerers that are in that group of people as well. But what it also means is that they're going to keep kicking the can down the road and keep supplementing incomes and keep spending money because the politicians are literally terrified of the social unrest that, or a repeat of the social unrest that we saw in 2020. When we then look at what's going on in Europe, the DAX index continues to push on the upside. We're definitely seeing that it is engineering type companies have been doing better. So Siemens is pushing on the upside and it's well on to new all-time highs. General Electric is coming back up towards the upper side of its range. There's a clear focus from some of these engineering companies on renewable infrastructure. Both Siemens and GE are very focused on that. Then we have the evolution of Subsea 7's business model. When we look at their description, they're still talking about the oil and gas sector, and it's still characterized as an oil field services company. But of course, their primary expertise is in offshore infrastructure. So the continued build-out of offshore wind is also likely to require their services. It's one of the few companies that has been able to survive. There are a large number of offshore drillers that have failed. And a good part of the reason for that is because they didn't transition quick enough to alternative business models. As we then think about the wider market, this question about bond yields is still unanswered. The bond yield today was up approximately 3 basis points. The Treasury future was down, slightly down 5 points, still holding the lows in here. I did open a long position yesterday. I was hoping for some upside follow through today. I did not get it. And the release of the stimulus package and the strength in the stock market may put additional downward pressure, and we may see another leg lower in bond prices. I'm not going to suffer for the faith. If prices do push on to new lows, well, then I'll just take my lumps and close the position. I am, however, starting to become progressively more interested in gold. We're not that far away from my initial baby steps buying levels that I imposed months ago in the gold price. It did pop today back above the $1,700 area, unwinding the downward dynamic from yesterday. This clear determination by governments, not just the USA, but everywhere, to spend their way out of trouble and devalue currencies is obviously a clear benefit for gold prices. And I do wonder how long it's going to take before the market starts paying attention to that. I think it's clear enough that investors don't really yet believe that the Federal Reserve is willing to tolerate inflation. But the reality is I think increasingly obvious that we are in a new monetary and fiscal environment, and the focus of attention will now be more on the fiscal and less on the monetary, and that governments are going to take over in terms of additional spending measures, which is a rerun of what we saw in the late 1960s and early 1970s, and that was what created the inflationary spiral of the latter half of the 1970s. So that is beneficial for gold over the medium to long term. It's really only a question of when investors will have a sufficient catalyst to start believing that that is in fact going to be the case, and then gold will move back into a bull market overall. Think it's also time to pay attention to Bitcoin, because it did pull back to break a midpoint danger line last week, and this is inconsistent. That we had this rivetingly consistent sequence of higher reaction lows and ranges one above another, and every one of those ranges was completed with a dynamic break on the upside, which then had upside follow through, and that ended on the 10th of March. When we had the, or maybe it was the 11th, we had the big pop on the upside, and then it came straight back down again, and the dynamic of the failure was lower, I was sorry, greater than the dynamic of the breakout, and then it pulled all the way back down to 50,000 and broke a midpoint danger line. So this is no longer a consistent trend. It means that the risk has increased, and at often, what we see is that trends lose consistency at the penultimate high. So, potentially, we could see it push on to new high ground, and if it sustains the move above 60,000, we would have to conclude that that is the case. But it will have to push above the 60,000 level in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Obviously, if we're in a less consistent environment, in a more risky environment, then personally, if I'm tempted to buy the breakout, it will be on a much smaller position than I'd had previously. And when we look at Ethereum, I continue to regard it as high beta Bitcoin, and it was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today and pushing on to a new high relative to what we saw back in mid-March. So Ethereum starting to push higher is encouraging in a manner similar to the fact that silver also rebounded somewhat in here today, but it has been exhibiting relative strength relative to gold. Upside follow through for silver tomorrow and a push back above the trend mean would certainly be encouraging. And then of course we have the fact that Gold shares had one of their most profitable ever in 2020, and yet the share price, or the ETF's price, has been falling now for 6 months. So it's now right in the region of the $30 area, which is the upper side of the underlying more than 6 year base formation. And this is a logical area where we might anticipate some support beginning to come back in. We can also then think about the performance of various commodity-related currencies, like the Australian dollar, where it is now unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. It's paused around the 80-cent level, but this does not look like anything other than some consolidation. If we are going to see more of a commodity-led bull market, and certainly increasing global demand for copper will be a portion of that, then it's likely to be beneficial for commodity-related currencies. The reality, however, is that copper is short-term overbought, and this looks like a consolidation that could go on a little bit longer in order to fully unwind the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.